Good evening. This is the KRFP Evening Report for Tuesday, October 6th, 2015. I'm Lee Robartis. In the news tonight, Idaho Legislative Tax Working Group discusses changing state tax code. University of Idaho President Chuck Staben announces 10-year plan will be written for the university, and Whitman County wheat grower discusses Snake River dams and grain transportation. And live in the KRFP studios in Moscow, Idaho, I'm Lee Robartis, and this is the KRFP Evening Report. Outgoing Idaho Commerce Department Director Jeff Sayer told an interim legislative tax policy working group today the state should not look at cutting taxes. Sayer said instead lawmakers should invest in more talented state workers. According to a Spokesman Review website account of the meeting at the Capitol, Sayer told the group of 12 lawmakers, 4 years ago, I would have said, yes, we need to have lower taxes to make ourselves competitive. I'm here to tell you what we're seeing is the return for the state is not lowering taxes, it's investing in talent. The tax working group, which formed this summer outside the normal legislative interim committee system and did not fully publicize its first meeting last month, has focused on proposals to flatten income tax levels in the state. Currently, the highest tax bracket for wealthiest Idahoans is 7.4%, and those in the lowest tax bracket pay 1.6%. The de facto committee that preceded the working group this summer went to Utah to discuss their 10-year-old 5% flat income tax system. The predecessor legislative committee met without any publicity two more times in Idaho and without official sanction before the tax working group was created by the heads of the House and Senate taxation committees. Some at the meeting today cautiously spoke favorably of Saylor's recommendation. House Tax Committee Chair Gary Collins of Nampa said, "There's no question that there's a talent shortage out there." Collins also claimed political reality dictates that lawmakers consider tax cuts this year. Collins said, "We had a surplus last year in our budget. There are going to be those that feel this is the time to take a harder look." Republican Senator Steve Vick of Dalton Gardens came into the meeting advocating for eliminating the state income tax entirely. Vick said of Sayer, he certainly has changed his tune. He was the one that was pushing for tax cuts. State economist Derek Santos presented an overview of the state's tax system to the committee, saying the state forgoes $1.97 billion in revenue every year from sales tax exemptions. That's more than the $1.45 billion the state collects in sales taxes every year. Santos also reported the state forgoes $330 million from income tax exemptions. Legislative budget analyst Keith Bybee said Idahoans are 41st nationwide in the amount of personal income which goes towards taxes. Bybee said residents rate 30th nationwide in personal income tax, 28th in sales tax, and 38th in property taxes. He said Idaho is last among the 11 western states in local and state tax burdens. The Tax Working Group has scheduled future meetings for Wednesday, October 14th and Tuesday, November 3rd. At the October meeting, the group will review existing income tax brackets, and each member will be expected to talk about which areas of the state tax system they'd like to fix. There will also be a report on how the state could tax internet sales. During his State of the University address yesterday, University of Idaho President Chuck Staben announced Provost John Weinseck will be creating a 10-year strategic plan. Staben also said he would like to stay on as president to shepherd the 10-year plan through. He said one of his goals will be to get more high school graduates into college. Staben said it's a tragedy when high school graduates can succeed in college but do not attend. He said, "We have one of the lowest rates and we need to change that." One way that may change is the new Ed Board plan to directly admit qualifying high school graduates. Students will receive letters at the end of October from the state telling them if they qualify to automatically enroll in the state's four-year universities, Lewis Clark State College, or one of the two-year community colleges. One of the supporters of the Snake River Flotilla, which called for the breaching of the four lower Snake River dams Saturday, was an outdoor supply company owner from Spokane. I spoke with Mountain Gear owner Paul Fish about what a free-flowing Snake River would look like for recreationists.
This is an amazing day that we see what a diverse recreation economy could do for this area with the fishermen that are out here, all the boaters, kayakers, canoers. I think this makes a real statement that now's the time. This is the economy that will support the area in a sustainable manner.
Okay. And how much will recreation expand if the Snake River dams are breached in your view?
Well, I think it'll change. I think you'll have the amazing scenery here. I was talking with someone who came down here as a kid this morning when it was a free-flowing river, and there were people camped out all along the river, in the fall and in the summer, and I think that'll come back instead of just in the small fall fishing season like it is now. I think you'll see boaters like you see out here today in whitewater kayaks and touring kayaks and rafts. So I think it'll become a year-round recreation economy down here.
What will the surface of the water be like if the dams are breached? It would be a rougher ride. You'd be river kayaking as opposed to essentially lake kayaking, which is what people do today, right?
You know, I think we'd have medium-moving water through here, so I think it'd be available to families. And I'm not positive that, but just thinking about what we'd have, we might have. And looking what's just upstream that's free-flowing, I think it would be reasonable water for a lot of people, not just whitewater boating.
And this jetty here would be landlocked. The shore would be further down most of the time, right?
Yeah, there would be remnants and relics of this part of history when the dams were here, just as a reminder to not do it again.
That was Mountain Gear of Spokane owner Paul Fish, who traveled down to the Snake River for the 3-mile flotilla from Oahu Landing to the Lower Granite Dam Saturday. I spoke to Fish along the jetty at the flotilla launch site. While sentiment is strong against breaching the four lower Snake River dams among Whitman County wheat growers, one farmer who was at the protest flotilla launch along the Snake River Saturday spoke of how growers might deal with the removal of the dams if it were deemed necessary to save salmon runs. I spoke with Whitman County wheat grower Brian Jones Saturday morning along the Snake River.
So a lot of grain growers are against the idea of breaching. Save our dams is a big thing among grain growers around here.
Yeah, I would think you're right, and I'd be in agreement with you in that. Yeah, I don't want to see the dams taken out unless we have a solution that allows us to get our grain to market.
Okay.
Rail, trucking are certainly the options that I refer to, but I think if we work together and carry on a dialogue, it'll keep us from banging heads against one another. We'll have opportunities to save a great species, open up the greatest river in the Pacific Northwest, if not the West Coast, maybe the nation, for a chance at salmon recovery. And I think a lot of agriculture would agree with me in that it's important to save species. And this is a great species. Consequently, if we can work together, save species, figure out a way to get our grain to market, I think I should be involved in the dialogue, and I think wish other farmers were involved as well. It doesn't mean that we're giving them a go-ahead, but we're in a dialogue.
Okay, and has the dialogue not been there recently? Is this some something that's more recently come up where, you know, grain growers are saying, they're not saying, oh, we're going to put our foot down and save the dams. So we're saying, okay, we need some alternatives or better infrastructure to replace the barging that we use.
I think they're reluctant to, you know, change the difficult thing. I think they're reluctant to get involved in changing the system as it is, and consequently, they're a little reluctant to get involved in the conversation. I think the great opportunity we have is be involved, come up with, you know, if we can work on putting rail's the easiest solution that I can think of, that I know of, put rail in place, farmers aren't going to care how they get their grain to market in the long run. And if they can get it there cheaper, faster, and move it to ports that are more efficient for us all, then we're all going to be better off in the long run.
Do you think the competition between different modes of transportation really helps grain growers? I mean, they want to see the trucking companies competing for customers with the rail, and therefore having barges is just another leg of the stool, so to speak.
Well, it does. It's a good point, and I think it is certainly part of it. I don't think barging necessarily competes with rail. I think we go and we look at, you know, rail figures out really quickly that if we can do it at cost and give the farmer a good deal, we're better off. A lot of it comes in the fact that farmers don't want to truck their grain 60 miles to Central Ferry, for instance, when they've got they're going to save money just taking it to McCoy Rail Station or Ritzville or wherever other rail systems that may be coming online. Yeah, there is a point there. You know, you take out one leg of the stool, and you've got some issues that you have to contend with. But at the same time, I think in a negotiation we could work something out that would allow farmers to keep a stable price on their shipping.
What are your thoughts about the state of the Eastern Washington grain rail system? I know the state of Washington owns at least part of the system around here.
Yeah, it's in its infancy. It's coming along. I'd like to see it continue to grow. What happened to the Snake River is beyond me. Why we didn't put two rails in when we could have is a crying shame. But, you know, I think these big companies, ones on top of my hat here, Columbia Grain, has seen that, you know, we can ship grain efficiently via rail. And so there are opportunities out there for them.
That was Whitman County wheat grower Brian Jones speaking at the launch of Saturday's Snake River Flotilla, calling for the breaching of the four lower Snake River dams. About 300 people and 175 kayaks and boats paddled the 3 miles downriver to the lower Granite Dam and back with giant banners and a giant blow-up salmon on the back of a boat, calling for a free-flowing river to save salmon runs. Demonstrators also bore the message that financial assessments on dam operations produced by the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers don't take into account millions of dollars in maintenance costs, including the expected $775 million it would cost over many years to replace the soon-to-be worn-out turbines at the four dams. The Moscow League of Women Voters will sponsor a candidates forum tomorrow night for Moscow City Council candidates. The candidates invited are Jim Boland, Dan Karskalin, Catherine Bonzo, and John Freeland. The candidates will have three-minute opening statements. Members of the League of Women Voters will gather written questions from the audience, and the moderator will ask candidates the questions. The conclusion will include a two-minute summary from each candidate. Voters are allowed to vote for up to three candidates, and the three top vote-getters will be sworn in to serve four-year terms on the six-seat Moscow City Council. The forum will take place tomorrow night, Wednesday, at 7 p.m. at the 1912 Center in Moscow in the Great Room, 412 East 3rd Street. It's expected to last 2 hours. Thanks for listening to the KRFP Evening Report for tonight. Taking a look at the weather from the National Weather Service. Increasing clouds tonight, low 52, 60% chance of rain tomorrow, mainly in the afternoon, cloudy high 66, 40% chance of rain mainly before midnight tomorrow night, cloudy low 54, mostly cloudy Thursday, high 75, partly cloudy Thursday night, low 54, and mostly sunny, high 79 on Friday. Currently, fair sky 70 degrees at the Pullman-Moscow Regional Airport. Thanks for tuning in to the KRFP Evening Report. Coming up next, we have Making Contact, our weekly documentary from the National Radio Project, followed by Flashpoints, the daily investigative news magazine from Pacifica Radio. That'll be followed at 7:30 with the program Tuesday Night Grab Bag with Dave Weaver, and Kentaro's in with Audiodrome at 9 o'clock. I'm Lee Robartis. Thanks for tuning in to the KRFP Evening Report. If you want to help KRFP keep newscasts like this on the air, plus the newscasts you hear during Morning Mix, the recordings of local events and the public affairs shows, plus the music and arts programming you hear every day on KRFP, be sure to become a member of KRFP and also attend our fundraiser 11th annual birthday party Friday night at the 1912 Center starting at 7 p.m. Have a good night. This is KRFP Moscow Pullman, community radio for the Palouse at 90.3 on your FM dial.